Hello and welcome aboard this podcast of RTÉ Radio 1's maritime programme Seascapes, which is presented and produced by Marcus Connaughton. You can email the programme seascapes@rte.ie. Hello and welcome aboard this week's edition of your maritime programme Seascapes. This week, we have a new shanty outfit, the Mallgoggers. Michael Martin explains the origins of their name, and we'll have music from their forthcoming CD. A listener, Eugene Furlong, on the discovery of the ship's cabin from The Quest and its Norwegian Odyssey. Last weekend saw the centenary of the feathered lifeboat disaster of 1914, which saw nine crewmen of the RNLI vessel, the Helen Blake, lose their lives aiding the shipwrecked Norwegian schooner, the Mexico, off the coast of Wexford. There were ceremonies in Feathered last Saturday and on Sunday last at the Borough on Rosslare Strand. Seascapes called by Skulvira National School on the Strand, where we met up with Des Pear, Secretary of the Trustees of the Lifeboat Memorial on the Borough. First, let's hear from Leo Coy of the Rosslare Maritime Museum. They had a pop-up version and he gave us a tour of the photographic exhibition, the Fourth Settlement and the display of memorabilia from the Mexico.
It's 100 years since the rescue of the crew of the Mexico and also the sad loss of the nine people on the feathered lifeboat, the Helen Blake.
We can see on display here some medals but also the gooseneck from the vessel.
Yeah, that's right. That was obtained from the wreck, I presume, a few weeks or months afterwards. And it's in remarkable condition. We've also got a bit of a piece of the hull of the Helen Blake as well, a piece that was washed ashore. And also on display, we've got the medals awarded to Captain Busher of the tug Wexford. The tug towed the James Stevens, the fourth lifeboat, from Rosslare Fort round to Kira Rocks for the dramatic rescue. The fort was a very important part of the maritime history of Wexford. It guarded the entrance into Wexford Harbour. It was like a little island out in the bay, and unfortunately it got washed away in 1925 with no loss of life, We've got some photographic memories of the fort and a few artifacts as well that were found out there. We're in the gymnasium, I suppose, of the school, but they have dedicated one room here to in Rosslare School, Murrah, to it's called the James Stevens Room, and they've got their own little mini museum in there and many artifacts about the James Stevens, the lifeboat, the people, and the fort as well. We built up a collection over many years, particularly Brian Clare, who's he's got a library of photographs and knowledge. And there's been a couple of books written about the Mexico as well. So we've accumulated lots of photographs over the years. But they tend to be, there's a very limited number of photographs, so we tend to use the same ones over and over again. And of course, Brian Clare, he's done a fine painting of the Mexico as well. And
what we're looking at here is the fact that you've got oarsmen, you haven't got the technology that we have today, so it was a lot of physical work to go out on a shout.
Yes, in an open boat, with no protection really, apart from oilskins from the sea. They were very brave and very tough men, but for this particular rescue, it took 6.5 hours, being towed by the tug Wexford to get round to the Kira Rocks, and by the time they got there, they were being cold and wet, and then, you know, they had to stand by for a while, and then they were down there for a couple of days before they even attempted the rescue. So, not much food, not much grub. You know, bad conditions. They were very, very, very tough men. The RNLI is very important to everybody, and they do tremendous work, especially in this area. We've got the Rosslare Harbour lifeboats, which we're very proud of. It's a fine vessel and a great station and a terrific crew. And RNLI is very, very well respected throughout Ireland. There were four lifeboats involved, our own from Rosslare Fort, Kilmore, Key Lifeboat Dunmore East, and Feathered Lifeboat itself. And one person who is often forgotten is the Coast Guards were involved as well, was Ned Bryan, who managed to get a line onto the island from the Dunmore East lifeboat, which was instrumental in getting some of the people off, you know, which was very important. And he's sometimes forgotten in the story of the Mexico. There was no radio communication. And what was dreadful about this was that the people on the shoreline could see people on the rocks, but they couldn't identify who they were. So for three days, they were wondering if their loved ones were on the rocks or if they were in the sea. Terrible. And no communication at all.
That shot of Walter Power, the coxswain of the Dunmore East lifeboat, a fine broth of a man before a ship's wheel.
Yeah, he was another very, very brave man. And he would have been exposed in the lifeboat. The shot of him, he looks well weather-beaten. Yeah, very brave, very brave sailor. And Rosslare School, they've been working for the last couple of months on the story of the Mexico. And they even took a couple of classes from the school down to Feathered to meet up with the school down there, which is brilliant because it carries the story on for another generation, you know. They've done great work and they've done a little mini display themselves on all aspects of the Mexico rescue.
Leo Coy there of the Rosslare Maritime Museum. Hundreds gathered last Sunday at the borough representing the RNLI and the Coast Guard Service and the local community. Prior to the parade and wreath-laying ceremony, Seascapes talked to Des Pair, Secretary of the Trustees of the Lifeboat Memorial on the borough, about the historic maritime heritage on display in the school.
Now, I'm a sort of a newer member of the Rosslare Lifeboat Memorial Committee. It's been formed now about 33 years, and basically what happened was that there's elderly people that were on a day trip and went down to Feathered and they seen the monument they had down there, and decided that they'd fundraise and put a monument in Rosslare for the people that were involved in the James Stevens that was involved with the rescue of the Mexico. There was four lifeboats involved, Kilmore, Dunmore, Feathered, and our own one, James Stevens, which was down based on the fort in Rosslare at the time. The fort now is actually completely washed away. It doesn't exist anymore. It's only just basically sand and stone. It washed away in 1924-25, roughly, but it had been diminished since then. It was a major garrison, military base, and the lifeboat was there. The customs were there, and the pilot station was there. I know we're on radio, it's hard to see, but there's actually a picture of it here before it's washed away. So it's a lot of people wouldn't know it. Even people who live in Rosslare would look down on the point in Rosslare and they wouldn't even realise there was a settlement there. And at one stage it was nearly over 750 acres, but the end of it was fortified, and it was because of the fort. It was to do with Wexford Harbour being so one of the busiest ports in Europe at the time. It was a Confederate port, and it really was up to Cromwell invaded it as well. And once Cromwell it went into disrepair after that, but then the revenue took it over and the pilots and they took it over, and they stayed and they kept the lifeboat down there. So it was quite a unique thing, but it's not there anymore, sadly. But we have a lot of in the museum today now. We have a lot of pieces off the fort, little bits of things, I suppose you can see them down, and we have a scale model and stuff like that. But when they opened the monument down where we're heading down now, later on down in the borough, there was a bit of an local interest in it, so they actually set up a museum in the National School here. This is where we are today now in Rosslare. And basically this is what we call a pop-up museum, I suppose, at this stage, because the museum was in another room, but we moved it down there. But today now we've taken it all out and put it in here. And we've teamed up with Rosslare Harbour Maritime Museum, and they brought most of their stuff over from Kilran. That's where they are, in the old tourist office. And basically it's a combination of the lads in the harbour and the the lads down here now going together and putting up this display that you see here today now. It just goes to show like 100 years ago but it's the least we can do, because 100 years ago you had lifeboat men putting out to sea and a lot worse than this now, something like the weather we had a couple of weeks ago for 3 days, nearly 4 days on an open lifeboat. So it's the least we can do is maybe spend a half an hour of a Sunday or an hour to come down and commemorate them. But Feathered had their due now yesterday and they had a very good turnout, and delayed the four lifeboats were down at the Kirox, which is unusual now. Hasn't happened since that tragedy. It was great to see it. Yeah, there was no auxiliary power in those. Sail or rowing, that's the only thing. The only reason the Wexford fourth lifeboat could get actually down there was the tug. And the tug picked it up, got the shout from Wexford to pick them up off the point with the fort there. That's where the lifeboat was and towed them. And they were lucky they weren't lost, because actually the tow rope broke off the hook and they had to run for shore and get the sail up. So it could have been a lot worse. We could have lost our own crew as well as the tragedy. And fairly, as bad as it is, it could have been a lot worse. And I they were brave men to stay there, as far as I can see. We've always led the reed here. It's the 33rd year now we've led the reed at the Bonnymouth. We've led the reed ever since it was erected, every year. And this year, with the 100 year anniversary, we're actually putting a parade in, and we have local dignitaries that were laid, actually 6 wreaths today. And it'll go on for about, I'd say about an hour or so, a little bit of music, a little bit of a ceremony. We're a little bit different than Feathered, because I've spoken to the guys in Feathered. Theirs is commemoration because it's dead, but ours is a celebration. We like to remember Feathered. We're actually laying 10 roses for the crew and the crew of the lifeboat and the single man that was lost off to Mexico, so we're remembering them as well. And remember, of course, our own men that got back safely. I live in Rosslare and I'm involved in I'm not involved in the lifeboat itself, because the crew was based in Rosslare Harbour. I imagine if the boat was still in the fort, I possibly wouldn't. I'd be very proud to be, but I try and do a bit of fundraising, and our committee here do a lot of fundraising, particularly in the summer, because it's quite a busy resort. And there is a few pound going around here, that's enough. But we'd have a golf classic, and they also have the Churchgate collection there as well. But a lot of people, even in the village now, because there is a sort of a transient in the village, a lot of people move in and retire now, they wouldn't be that much connected, to be honest with you. It means very little to them. And this is a great thing to highlight. A lot of people in the village now would maybe hear quite a long time and they didn't know anything about this. Because this is really, at the time, the village wasn't what it is today. It wasn't a holiday resort as such, and there wasn't a lot of building in this end of it. There was a little bit of people living on the fort, and then the other end of the village was population, but the middle of it was very little, was very, very sparsely populated. I suppose as the harbour itself diminished as a trading port, the defences and what they were going to spend on it diminished as well. So once the port declined, at the time, in the latter end of it, the only people who were on the thing was the pilot, possibly, and some of the lifeboat crew. There was nobody else on it. It was a very, very desolate place in the latter end of it. There was no one living there.
So when you, what stands out for you in terms of the whole rescue? Is there an individual or one of the craft when you heard the story first all those years ago?
Well, I suppose going back for my own people that are involved in it, and even I'm distantly related to the Welshes, but they didn't speak about it that much. I know my own father and my own grandfather wouldn't have, and it would have been related to two of the members of the crew actually, and as I know neighbours there are great grandsons, but they even wouldn't have heard their own grandfather. They would have took it in their stride and they would have done it, and that's what they've done, and they didn't really talk about it that much. It's only maybe when you get an anniversary coming up, and maybe I suppose some of them said they didn't talk about it often enough, and they didn't ask them either. So I suppose there's been a bit of sadness maybe that they don't know whether it was a big deal to them or it wasn't, or maybe it was and they didn't speak about it at different times and they were different men, but they took it. But they were used to it, and that was their life, and once the call came, they went. And I think behind it, they were willing to sacrifice themselves for this thing, and that's what they knew. They weren't foolish men or anything. They were well educated in the sense that they knew all about the sea and all. It was to go out in an open boat like that, sure, you certainly want to know what you're doing, because one mistake there, and you not only you put yourself in danger, but you've put your crew in danger. And they had no auxiliary power. There was no, we see models of lifeboats here today, but a lot of horses and those, if you want to press the button. I'm not saying what they're doing now is any It's any different, and less dangerous now, but at least the chances that they would come back safe are, and with the communications they have now, like for instance, like the people down here didn't know anything about their own crew until they actually somebody got on the train from Waterford and come down on the train in Waterford to tell them. There was no phones or anything like that. So as far as they were concerned, and the people down there, because it was down in Feather, they were standing on the shore there. It's just like you can see it for a mile out there, you can see it. But you knew there were people standing there, but you didn't know whether it was who was gone and who was alive. So there was no communications then, 100 years ago.
Des Pair in Rosslare Strand at the centenary commemorations for the Mexico and the Helen Blake. You can see much more on the Seascapes webpage. Last Friday night on Seascapes, we featured naturalist Jim Wilson and his travels in Antarctica. Well, a listener, Eugene Furlong, contacted Seascapes to say that the hut from the Quest, with strong links to Ernest Shackleton, still exists, and that Ulf Bakke is the name of the man who owns the cabin from the Quest. His grandfather was working in the shipyard where the ship was brought to be refitted as a sealing boat. As far as Eugene can make out, he saw this nice cabin that was to be broken up and said to himself, that would make a nice shed. Eugene became aware of the cabin in 2008 when friends of his in Solvier said to him in passing, the cabin where Shackleton died is in a museum near Bodø. So he inquired and to his dismay was told that the cabin was going to southern Norway to be refitted and shipped to Grytviken on South Georgia. So he thought, that's that. Well, the people in Solvier got back to him with great news that the deal for the cabin to go south had fallen through, and it was back near Bodø. Eugene went to Solvier in October and made his pilgrimage to see the cabin. He said it was very emotional to be sitting in the cabin. He was given a mug of coffee and told he was the first Irish person to be in the cabin since 1925. Well, to follow on from that story, it so happens that Ulf Bakke arrives in Dublin this weekend. He'll be touring around for a few days and he's giving a talk about the cabin from the Quest in the Royal Irish Yacht Club in Dún Laoghaire on Saturday afternoon, the 8th of March at 4 p.m. You can see and read more on the Seascapes webpage, www.rte.ie/radio1/seascapes. Spaces are limited, so do contact the Yacht Club. Well, next here on Seascapes to Sea Shanties, a new shanty group has formed in the seaside town of Cove. Author and historian Michael Martin of the Titanic Trail is a member of the group, the Mallgoggers. He explained how they came together.
A lot of us, you see, served in the Navy together. So we would have been each other's company at sea, and all have an appreciation, I think, of, you know, the great spectacular nature that you're exposed to at sea with wind and tide. I think that many of us who have served on what would be now kind of modern ships, your fascination and I suppose your admiration grows when you think about the conditions that sailors had to, you know, suffer in the days of the sailing ships and whaling and cold waters and all of that. So we would have had a general interest in all matters to do with the sea. We would have had an admiration, I suppose, all of us for sailors who had gone before us. And I think most of us were people who liked singing anyway. So it was a natural thing that we fell into this, really. There's a huge repertoire of songs there, and both, you know, the sea shanty and the maritime song sort of lend themselves to the diversity of life at sea. The shanties, as you know, would have originally been formulated to assist in the physical task of turning a capstan or reefing in the sails or hauling up the anchor, and there were certain beats and stuff to them, and they were associated with work for the most part. Other songs then, maritime songs, were often more associated with recreation than work, where they'd have fond memories of the girls they left ashore and those sort of themes that ran through them. And then many of them are about life at sea itself and, you know, the difficult conditions, both whaling and sailing. So there's such a great broad amount of material there to choose from, with all of those themes and many others running through. So we'd no difficulty choosing those sort of songs.
So where did you draw on for your membership of the Shanty Group, and how many are in it?
Well, there are 9 of us in the group altogether, and 4 of us have over 100 years of sea service between us. We also have a gentleman who was very interested in choir singing. He's a very good musician. And another man who was involved in kind of an ordinary band. But I think all of them were drawn to the idea of 9 gravelly voices, elflas like me, with no instruments and kind of knocking a tune out of that. And the tunes, as you know, the songs themselves are great fun. And the 9 of us, I mean, we've been meeting every Monday night now, you know, for the last over a year. So we've come to know each other well, and there's a great group dynamic there. So we're very happy with the group as we have it. The gentleman who founded the group was Jim Halligan, and he himself has written a couple of songs. He wrote a song called All Aboard, and he has another one under the pen, I believe, pointing towards a new centenary that's coming up. But Jim, born and reared in Cove, around singing and song all his life, and he really was the driving force that identified us and got us together, you know, and he'd done a good job. So we've kind of diverse backgrounds, but I suppose the one thing that's common to all of us is a love for the sea and the tradition, you know, which, like you've pointed out, we kind of think the tradition of seafaring and maritime song and expression is sort of underplayed for such a maritime country, you know. So we hope to change that. And
particularly when you think, Michael, of some of the great maritime heroes we have, whether it's the more obvious ones like Crean and Shackleton, but then you have fellas like, only down the road from Cove, really, Bransfield, rather, from Ballinacurra, who discovered Antarctica.
Yes, well, the name of the group, we tied with all sorts of maritime names and so on. And one of our group members, Paddy Kavanagh, who was a sea captain himself, in what he says was a bolt of inspiration, came up with the idea of calling us the Mallgoggers. And anybody who was at sea, particularly on the ton-class minesweepers, and all of us in the Navy served on them, would be familiar with the Mallgogger. Because what it was at the stern of the ship, right at the very back, the minesweepers in particular had huge towing duties. They had to tow floats. They had to tow electric cables to activate mines in a safe way. And with these ropes, tows and leads going out the back of the ship, they had to be contained in a very narrow area. So number one, instead of, you know, destroying the gunwale of the ship while a rope or a line was leading out, you had a roller. Now, in the case of the minesweepers, it was a huge, about a foot in diameter, maybe more, and it was made from the hardwood lignum vitae. That was horizontal, but immediately either side of that, there were 2 vertical rollers, thinner in diameter, probably about 4 or 5 inches, so that if the lead went off port or starboard from its centre line, those rollers would help it along too. Nowadays, they have the kind of boring name of International Fair Leads, but we prefer the older name of the Mallgogger, and so the name comes around. And the Mallgoggers, we have our first concert coming up very shortly. It's on in the Queenstown Story Heritage Centre in Cove. It's on the 15th of March at 8 p.m. We have a local artist on first, and then we're launching our new CD called Maiden Voyage. The proceeds of the door will go to a local charity, the Park Road Community Centre, which is a favourite charity in Cove. So it promises to be a great night. We're certainly going to have fun there, and ticket sales have been brisk. And the Heritage Centre, what a wonderful setting to have it in. And we're right by the sea there anyway. So we're looking forward to that. And it's on, as I say, on the 15th of March, Saturday the 15th of March at 8 p.m.
Oh, the times was hard and the wages low.
Leave her, Johnny, leave her.
And the grub was bad and the gales did blow.
And it's time for us to leave her. Leave her, Johnny, leave her. Oh, leave her, Johnny, leave her. For the voyage is done and the winds don't blow. And it's time for us to leave her.
I thought I heard the old man say,
leave her, Johnny, leave her.
You can go ashore and take your pay.
And it's time for us to leave her. Leave her, Johnny, leave her. Oh, leave her, Johnny, leave her. For the voyage is done and the winds don't blow, and it's time for us to leave her.
Leave her, Johnny, featuring Michael Martin. As Michael mentioned, the Mallgoggers play the Cove Heritage Centre, which houses the Queenstown story in Cove, on Saturday, the 15th of March, when they'll be launching their debut CD titled Maiden Voyage. We wish them well. Charlie McCarthy contacted Seascapes to let us know that this weekend near Dundalk, Carlingford Sailing Club are hosting a talk by explorer and intrepid sailor Paddy Barry. He'll be giving an illustrated talk on the epic 4,500-mile voyage of the Northabout. That's this Sunday in the Carlingford Sailing Club at 4 o'clock. You can contact the club directly for further details. Next week here on Seascapes, we'll have a full report from the Irish Sailing Association Awards Ball, which takes place this weekend in the Royal Marine Hotel in Dún Laoghaire. Norman Freeman will have a tale of the loss of the Talawa to a Japanese submarine in the Indian Ocean. And from Galway, Jerry Flynn will have the details on the latest edition of Inshore Ireland magazine. All that and much more here on Seascapes. Until next Friday night, tight lines, fair sailing.